Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. 14 minutes after 9, time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Today we are joined, or will be joined, by WAMC's Alan Shartok and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Now, you can join the conversation. You can call us at Roundtable, or no, email us, that's what it is, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage. That's WAMC.org, or you can go to our Facebook page, or you could tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Any of those ways work. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable@WAMC.org is a great email address. Oh, and look what the cat dragged in, our panel. What the heck happened to you?
We were having an important discussion.
I see.
We were having an important discussion outside.
Yeah.
About things academic.
Well, that's terrific.
We were rehearsing.
You know
how prepared we are for
well,
this.
Well, Rosemary is prepared.
Well, your standard line is?
Anyone can prepare.
Anyone can prepare. And
yeah.
So I've given Rosemary a list of all the articles we'll talk about today.
Apparently she got a little late.
Actually, she was here on time.
Yeah.
I think you perhaps delayed her. And frankly, I mean, I would love to have the guests in here for a moment prior to the show just to discuss, you know, a couple of things.
Right, sure.
But now you're here and we're on the air.
And we have a lot of really interesting news items today, too.
Yeah, well, we'll start with issue one. The president went before the public. You heard it on these airwaves last night at 9 o'clock. President Obama now pressing the pause button, is how CNN put it, on his hard sell for a military strike. He said he's willing to see if the Russian plan is verifiable, it's viable. Now, the Russians, want to give al-Assad in Syria a chance to give up his weapons. The president is still a bit wary of this, and I think rightly so.
Sure. Well, I think he's either the luckiest man in the world or a genius, because he had really gotten into a bad spot. And I think what happened here is that along comes Putin, for whatever his reasons are, and basically thinks that since the last client state that the Russians have in the Mideast is Syria, that he doesn't want anything to screw it all up. He's also worried, of course, that his client will lose, and that the very people who he is most afraid of, who have gone into some of his, you know, outward states, will use the weapons that are there against him. So he comes in and does what he has to do. Now, when I say is Obama a genius, how much of the Russian-United States relationship was known to Obama? He says, you know, it was just sort of just happened. I on the other hand, wonder if these things just happen, if Kerry just makes an offhand remark and the
right.
Russians.
On the social media, that's what, of course, it's been absorbing people, is whether this was an off-the-cuff or slip-of-the-tongue remark by John Kerry or if it was planned. But, I'm not sure. I think that demeans John Kerry, who, let's not forget, also had the Palestinians and the Israelis back at the negotiating table before we got sidetracked here by Syria. I think he knows what he's doing. And it's diplomacy. When you talk to people, these slips of the tongue happen. You begin to think about, wait, is there another way around this? And I think you're right about Putin. I think he does not want to be in the position that he found himself with his client state, Syria, being the world's bad guy. And I don't think he's afraid at all about them losing. Syria was in position to win this. Assad was winning this war before this all began.
So John Kerry goes to Geneva on Thursday to talk to Sergey Lavrov and hopefully iron this whole thing out. The question is, how long does al-Assad get to comply? And I think that's the $64,000 question at this point.
Well, look, I don't think that he can afford to mess with Putin. That's the point.
So he's not worried about the warships. He's worried about Putin.
No, I think he may be worried about the warships, but I think
and Putin
he's,
is worried
but,
about
but
the
I
warships.
Think,
he wants them out of there.
Yeah,
he says you can't ask somebody to disarm while you're making threatening.
Which is ridiculous.
Actually, you
of
can.
It is.
Yeah. You can and they
Didn't
will.
That happen in Cuba?
Yeah, I think they can and they will. But I keep bringing up the Cuban thing because what is so interesting to me is what we don't know. We don't know what's been going on, the back traffic between the Russians and the U.S.
Right.
We don't know because, and we never found out until basically months, if not years later, about what we gave in on Cuba.
Exactly.
So it may well be that in a democracy, you don't get to know everything. If you don't get to know anything, then how can you
Here's this thing. I think in the democracy, we can afford to know more than we do. But what's missing, what has been missing for years, is the idea that the U.S. talks to anybody. It was George Bush's the epitome of it, but it probably started before him, the right of the U.S. to intercede and do whatever it wants to be, not just the policeman, but the unregulated policeman of the world.
Well, that's funny you say that, because in the speech last night, President Obama made a point of saying the U.S. is not the world's policeman, but then he went on to say, what kind of a world are we going to live in if we see a dictator in total violation of international law, gassing his own people, and we look the other way? So he's saying it out of both sides of his mouth.
And this is where the U.N. was supposed to work, could still work if we ever put as much effort into that as we do into our messed up foreign policy on our own. Diplomacy works, and this is exactly what it's supposed to do. Hit the pause button. That means a cooling down period. We're going to chill. We're going to see what else we can be done in this situation.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're supposed to do when you have a crisis.
Except Rosemary, just speaking the voice of every man, not particularly myself, there will be people who will respond to you and say, if you chill, Assad wins. You know, that
Assad for 2 years has been killing people. For 2 years, untouched.
Sure.
So I hate that. If we were going to intercede, yes, let it have been 2 years ago. That didn't happen. But here's the situation we're in right now. Going forward, Assad does not win. He's under more scrutiny.
Well, nobody,
he's under more pressure.
But
Russia now has some sort of stake in working with the United States and even France and coming with a solution. That he's worse off than he was a week ago.
Well, not necessarily. I think he may win in that the president and a lot of others were saying there's no room for Assad in the Middle East. He has to leave. He has to get out. Now, under this deal, Assad stays.
For now. At least at least we don't kick him out.
Well,
in theory, the turn of events will eventually lead to him not being there.
How do you know that?
I think history is against him. He can't stay there. And by the way, what happened to our special forces? We tried to do that, not very well now that I'm mentioning, but why aren't we sending special forces in to take out Assad if he's really the problem?
Well, we're not sending anybody in. There are not going to be boots on the ground here unless...
We say that when we send our CIA people in.
Unless they really come back hard.
The clear reason is we don't kick out Assad at this point because it's like a Cracker Jack box full of strychnine. And you kick him out and the prize is something worse.
Right.
And so that's the concern, I think, of Israel and the U.S. and a lot of others. Now, interestingly, you brought up the U.N. and this would seem to be a gift from, now I know Putin is being called the chess master and the winner in this, but this is almost a gift to President Obama, who was clearly going to lose the vote in Congress to authorize military action. Now he gets a delay, and it's also possibly a victory for the UN, because 10 days ago, President Obama said, listen, the UN is completely impotent here. It will not do anything. It is hamstrung. It will not do anything. Now it's, well, let's see what the UN says.
Yeah, I think that the UN has had a role, could have a role, could have a better role if it were used well by the powerful leaders of the world. And there's one other element in all this, Alan. We were talking about it in our little tardiness before the show.
Yes,
the
nice.
Fight between the Shiites and the Sunnis. And please talk about that a little, because I find that fascinating.
Well, I don't think a lot of people understand the way that it's being played. But what's interesting about the way this is unfolding is more and more they are. Whose client state is who?
Mm-hmm.
The Saudis and the Sunnis. The Sunnis and Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who knocked down our buildings on this very Memorial Day.
Exactly.
The Shias who are on the other side and who their client people are, which is Iran, who the Israelis, you know, really have big problems with. So when you start to see how deep this goes and how these civil wars keep popping up in all of these countries, there is a good question about what the hell we're doing there.
Yeah, who's John McCain, of course, illustrated just how ignorant we Americans are on this whole political divide between the Shias and the and the Sunnis. And I have made it my homework for the next month. I want to map this out and take a look at it, because I think there's a lot more going on here than we have paid attention to.
All right, well, let's take a short break here. We, because of our late-arriving panel, we're a little late on the break, and we'll discuss that in a moment. More on the Roundtable coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from 62 Center for Theater and Dance, presenting Alvin Ailey II, performing Revelations and Other Works, Tuesday, September 17th, 8 p.m., 62center.williams.edu. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Women owned and operated with a combined 70 years experience. Eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. The Mohawk Valley Garlic and Herb Festival, Canal Place, Little Falls, New York. Garlic and herb growers, garlic cuisine, live music and more, Saturday, September 14th, 10 to 5, Eat, Stink, and Be Merry, mvghf.com. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space, with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation, Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
Well, hi, everybody. It's the Roundtable on WAMC 925. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. And we've got a 4 or 5 minutes now before the break. So we'll start this topic.
I just ran out to get my iPad so that if anybody wrote to us at roundtable@wamc.org,
yeah,
we could see it.
Okay. Is it booted up?
It's booted up, very much booted up.
All right, very good, very good. All right, so in New York City, we have a situation where de Blasio won, but it's still unclear. Now, there are 5% of the votes to be counted, whether there will be a runoff.
Sure, he won by point, allegedly won by 0.2%.
Mm-hmm.
He got over that 40% more, which means that if the print, and remember, there were big problems with the voting machines down there in the world's greatest city. The old ones. They were bringing them out with dust on them.
And the
lever machines. I remember them from my boyhood, which was quite a while ago.
Well, they were around up until a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but you know what happened? The reason that we went to this new system is because they weren't doing too well. So what happened is, in some cases, they broke down and they gave out a lot of paper ballots, which will have to be counted in this case.
Right.
And I want to say one other thing about this, and that is Joe Loda, who is the Giuliani deputy mayor and all of the rest, is a guy who may well win. Oh, really? You mean a Democrat can lose in New York for the last 20 years?
Well, I think you're on to something, and it's fodder for discussion. We only have a couple of minutes here, but we'll certainly, you know, the panel was late today, and so we're a little behind our time. And so
you sure are harping on
that. Oh, come on. You know, you got a show, you show up, everything works out, right?
We're here.
We are, and we're being so brilliant. Okay, let's get back to Lodi. I think he's interesting. He actually is carrying the legacy of the current administration, Bloomberg administration, which was a very good one, 12 years, lots of progress. Everybody, you know, was seemingly happy.
The rich got richer.
And to some extent, the Giuliani administration as well.
I mean, what'd you say, Ryan?
And to some extent, the Giuliani administration as well.
Well, that's right. Don't count them out, even though there are so few Republicans.
I find that really interesting. I was in New York City for the past few days. It's been fascinating asking people.
So that's where you were.
Yes, I ran away.
Yeah.
And our colleagues would say, are you voting? Yes, everybody's voting. Who are you voting for? And they would say invariably things like, it's a terrible choice we have. Isn't it ridiculous? And that's how they were regarding the election.
Although they broke wildly for de Blasio.
Yeah, they did.
Yes,
they did.
I'm very interested in what Bloomberg is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to endorse Loda?
Anybody? Right.
And does Loda want him to endorse him?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
One thing political strategists would say is that if there is, in fact, a runoff, it may hurt the Democratic candidate in the general.
Sure, because it gives the Republicans time to consolidate and move ahead. Just like all those Republican debates at the national level, that certainly didn't hurt Obama.
But the baseball analogy applies here, which is, you know, the Mets and whoever else are duking it out for first place, or the Yankees are duking it out, and everybody says, well, you know, they have to work so hard that they'll lose because they're going to be so tired. But in fact, keeps their names out there.
Okay.
You know, I'm not so sure it doesn't work the other way.
All right, well, that's a good spot to stop. We will pick this up after the news. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Ed, welcome back to The Roundtable on this Wednesday morning. 9:36 is the time. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, we'd love to get your emails at roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, we got a couple.
We did. Robin called and sent at WAM to Roundtable. Why isn't Russia / Soviet Union, I think that's brilliant,
yeah,
constantly under attack by terrorists? Why does no one terrorize Russia?
They do.
Well, they do, and he's scared, and he's scared to death of it. Yeah, I think we know that. And then Joel Abdul says, I support the president, but one huge hole in his proposed military plan is the Syria's counterattack. I hope Syria complies with the surrender of weapons. I'm sure we all do. Thanks and love the show, Joel. That's nice, isn't
it? All right.
It?
Anybody want to weigh in on what Joel had to say? I mean, I think that's a legitimate concern.
Okay. Why is it legitimate?
Because not necessarily a counterattack against us, although he, in his interview with, I guess, Charlie Rose, he more or less implicitly threatened us.
You're talking about Assad. Yes.
Assad. However, well, I think Israel
someone.
Has to be
it
more concerned
yeah.
than we do in this situation. And not necessarily from Syria, but Iran, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look, if any of those countries unleash weapons of mass destruction against Israel or against us, I would say it's a fair assumption they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, no one is unaware of the fact that that this could lead to a regional war and a world war if that happens in this particular region. That's always been there. That's always been a threat. And I think Putin just referring to that is, I think it's rhetoric.
I think
he has as much to lose as we do.
Well, no, I think Putin.
More.
I think Putin understands it very well.
Exactly.
So when Assad says it to Charlie Rose, which is what happened here,
right?
Then. You know, I think he's whistling in the wind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The problem with Assad is that, of course, we all know he's a big liar. Mm-hmm. And he tells fabulous, big, fat lies.
Mm-hmm.
I see the president and others quoting Ronald Reagan saying, you know, trust but verify.
Yeah.
I think in this case, you really have to.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. All right, let's move on. Now, we talked about the New York City mayoral primary, and then there was the case of the comptroller's race, and Eliot Spitzer, who mounted a 9-10 week campaign, and thanks to Anthony Weiner, remained largely under the radar, and did surprisingly, well, I was surprised, he did very well. He lost, but Stringer won by about 4% with some votes to be counted.
Look at what Stringer had going for him. He had every newspaper who who apparently just hate Spitzer's guts because they all know, and I understand the Times and I understand the News and I understand the POST. It's disgusting, but they're both run by a couple of millionaires who have their hands in some kind of pot. But the Times, I think, should have known better. But in any case, the three newspapers, the entire political establishment, and he comes with it. I mean, he had nothing.
Oh, he was the governor, and he loses a race for controller in a city. Let's look at that. He lost. This was a race that brought scandal to the fore, and Americans and New Yorkers don't like it. I don't like it. I'm happy Christine Quinn is out of there, and not because she's a lesbian, but because there was one scandal. Oh, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I'm a bulimic, or whatever it was. I mean, enough. And Weiner hurt Spitzer. I think he might have won, except that Weiner's in there, and he's not really redeemed at all, it turns out. He's still sexting. And in my mind, that raised questions about Spitzer. I think these men, both Spitzer and Weiner, are very talented. I don't think they should be running for office. They should find jobs where they can contribute to the public good, but in a non-elected office.
Despite the fact that I am a friend of Eliot's, I can tell you now, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think he's fabulously interesting. I think his campaign slogans, which were, they're afraid of me, they know I'm going to do something here. We have a banking crisis, which was awful, which was never resolved, at least to my satisfaction, with the bad guys getting wrapped on the knuckles. I think they all knew that Spitzer had done it when he was AG and Attorney General, and then he would do it again now.
He could have done it when he was governor. He blew his chance.
Well, no.
He could have done much more then, and he blew his chance. And how do we know that he's not going to again? And Spitzer also has not hurt his cause by appearing to be kind of a dilettante looking for the next step, his whole little foray into media, too, had nothing to do with it.
You sound awfully angry.
I am tired of people who are marred and messed up saying, oh, I'm okay now. Give me another chance. I want people who are as talented as this without the taint. Are there none of those running for office anymore?
Rosemary, is there nothing, you know, it's a little personal, and I apologize for that, but is there nothing in any of our pasts?
We are not running for public office, Alan.
Well, but we are sitting here, and somebody could say, Alan, you shouldn't be sitting there because you once dumped a girlfriend, or
it was you.
Many years ago.
All right.
Before Rose Held. B.R. But you weren't nice about it, and you hurt somebody's feelings very badly. Are we absolutely, or think of all the people who've gotten divorces in life and all the rest of it. Are we really sure that we can be that condescending?
Unwinnable debate.
Okay.
I think there's people who think the way I do, and they voted.
But
in
let's
New York
shift
this weekend.
That now, and let's go to the Edison Research exit poll, which is interesting on two fronts. One, as Alan predicted, weeks ago, Mr. Spitzer won about 2/3 of the black vote.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more interesting in the Edison research, more than 6 in 10 voters in yesterday's primary had a favorable view of Mr. Stringer. This gets to your point.
It does.
More than half had a positive view of Spitzer.
Right.
So this tells me if he wants to move on in the political arena again, he's got a fair shot. He has expunged some of the dark clouds over his reputation.
As I said at the beginning, I think that he might well have won. This is not the mayor's job. It's the controller's job. And he definitely is qualified. There's no question. But then Wiener comes along and it's like, oh, it's not really fixed yet. And we have we have Miss Quinn running around in public. I am not anti-gay, but this is going to sound it. So I'm like cringing as I say it. But she's running around with her wife, which is like throwing her differences in the face of more conservative people. And I think there was a backlash against Spitzer, but I tough.
Clearly,
he
wasn't much of a backlash.
Himself.
What do you mean?
I mean, it was a 4% vote against Spitzer. It was not much of a backlash.
Well, yes, but you know, Rosemary has a point. I want to be sure. A major news agency to whom we subscribe gave us some copy this morning, which said that. Did you hear about this?
Yes, Christina was complaining about it when I walked in.
Which said that Spitzer had to resign from Congress.
But see, it's confusing.
So that's right.
It? Yeah.
That's right. So
that's
a small vote for you, Rosemary.
I think the role of scandal in these elections is really interesting. Al Gore lost in part because of his connection with a scandal-ridden Clinton White House.
He did not. Al Gore lost because he tried to distance himself from Clinton, and that was his mistake.
I point to you to my mother.
I love this.
I'm not voting for Al Gore because he was connected with Clinton, he's bad.
Oh, no. Al Gore was fatuous.
And I'll go back to the black vote for Spitzer in New York City because of their history, because of what has happened to blacks here. African Americans are more forgiving than white people, and they do believe in redemption more. So I do think that the scandal and Spitzer's role trying to get out of that did play a part in his good reception.
Yeah. Well, one guy who's not going to run
again. I think
again.
You're wrong.
Oh, boy.
I think Al Gore, there was an assemblyman in the Hudson Valley. I'm not going to talk about him by my name, around the Kingston area.
Okay.
Well, he came out against Clinton in that same time and said, I can't vote for him. As a result, he was thrown out of office.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what are you going to do? Get the Democrats who loved Clinton. He retires from office as the most
popular
president in the history of the president.
Well, it's true. Every time Clinton is mentioned, you have to say he retired from office as the most popular president.
Don't you think that that's of relevance, Mr. Raymond?
I'm not sure.
He has a cool wife who's cleaned up the name too. Let's not forget that in the mind of many.
But I
cannot argue that, you know, there's a clear and definite role that scandal plays in the future lives of politicians, but there is some role there.
Yeah.
And I think we saw that in New York because we just had so many scarred candidates.
Now, I didn't see any of the debates, but apparently they were ugly debates, and Stringer repeatedly said, Spitzer, money laundering. Well, money laundering was a key thing that he brought up.
Well, his people obviously had some very brilliant people helping him with his campaign.
Who is this?
Stringer. Okay. And I think Stringer is an interesting name. I like Stringer. We've interviewed him, and I think he's a decent guy. I've said that, from the beginning. But I don't think he's Mr. Charisma. I can tell you that much.
But do you need to be to put on your visor and count beans? I mean, do you need to be Mr.
The comptroller, right.
Yeah. Well, it depends. If you're going to be a kind of comptroller who gets in a bank's face and you're voting shares and walk into the meetings and say, we're out unless you clean up your act, do we think we're going to see that from Scott Stringer? I don't think so.
You don't have to be an in-your-face public politician to go up against banks effectively. You know, there was, to name one Democratic lawyer, David Bowes, has gone up against big companies and major clients.
Well, I'm talking about this race. The establishment had a choice. They could back Spitzer and say, okay, all is forgiven for your what's the right word? Peccadillos or whatever you call them.
Yeah.
Peccadillos? You know,
whatever it is.
God, is that just such a male? That's like police saying incident when they mean mayhem and murder. Yes, right. It's peccadillos.
You do say nice.
Boy, if I have to stop this show,
Bloomberg. I want Bloomberg back. And term limits. Bring them back.
All right, that's a great spot.
Maybe you'll buy it.
It's a nice balanced spot to take a break. Hey, Hopper, let's take a break. It's the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from the Sembrick Bolton Landing, New York, thanking their staff, supporters, and the community for their support of the 2013 season, thesembrick.org. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, curtislumber.com. And Dr. Richard Holub at the Neurological Associates of Albany, providing Alzheimer's research programs for over 25 years, currently enrolling a research study for people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, alzheimersalbany.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 948. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. And Alan, we have another one via the email, eh?
Yep. Neil wrote in and said, Rosemary said the following. I'm paraphrasing. He's late because he was driving. Diplomacy works. Assad has been killing people for 2 years. So didn't we go in then? Why only do we want to go in with the military option? And then Neil says, why don't you believe that diplomacy was what was being done for 2 years? Diplomacy has to be done in secret. So why assume it wasn't tried? In a speech, the president said it was tried, but it failed to prevent the chemical attacks. But you imply that it wasn't even tried. Why, Rosemary? Why?
Oh, that's actually a good point. I hope you're right. I hope that not getting involved over the past 2 years was a result of ongoing talks. That would be lovely to think.
Well, and you're also skeptical? And is that thought balloon over your head again?
It would be a diversion from the kind of foreign policy we've had in the United States for many years now, which is that we just go ahead and we don't work with our allies enough. We don't work with just talking to people. We take action.
So you don't think with Iran or North Korea we've tried backdoor to get in to make sure that...
Well, we have Dennis Rodman now in North Korea. So I guess we
coaching
are trying public,
our
public
spy.
Diplomacy.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to that either. I think that's not a bad thing.
All right. Well, we should probably talk about this, that it was 12 years ago almost, this hour, one of the most horrible events of my lifetime happened, 8:46 at 9:03. The planes crashed into the World Trade Center. And things changed. And this was an interesting article today from USA Today. 12 years after the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and amid a summer of revelations about the extent of the surveillance state built up to prevent other attacks, leaders, experts, and average Americans alike are searching for the right balance between security and privacy. And we've heard some amazing things from the NSA. In fact, yesterday they released tons of previously classified documents about the tracking of telephone records.
Right.
And I think politicians, people on the street, everybody wants to know, how do you strike the balance?
Well, when you stop a single bombing in Times Square of a truck because a cop happened to see something happening out of that, a vigilant cop. And we stopped people from blowing up airplanes with their shoes and their underwear and all the rest of it.
But Alan, what's the connection with privacy or invading records? Both of those incidents you cite came from alert first responders,
right.
not from a dragnet over
the records of hundreds of citizens, thousands of citizens. Here's my professional start.
That's very good.
Let me try to answer that question, which is, it shows they're out there and that they're trying, the Al-Qaedas and the other guys. So, therefore, while I couldn't subscribe more to the fact that we may have erred on the side of doing too much intrusion, there is no question that they're out there trying to do it. And what are we supposed to do? Not do anything?
Well, this is the problem, and I love backing up Rosemary because it helps the argument continue.
Yeah, also because, you know, you like her better than me.
Well, why wouldn't he?
Exactly. So the NSA released documents yesterday, and there were 17,000 or so numbers included on a list in 2009 that they tracked. Of that, according to this Freedom of Information Act, the response to that, only 1,800 met the reasonable, articulable suspicion of having links to terrorism.
Right.
What about the other 15,000?
The New York Times.
What about the 1,800?
New York Times had an article in their business section yesterday that, as a way around, that little document called the Constitution, at the border now, if you're bringing a computer across the border, they can seize your computer and look at all your information. Unlawful search and seizure, and they use the excuse of drugs and terrorism as a way to do that.
Sure.
If what you're saying, Alan, is true, that they are taking away some of our rights to protect us, then that is a good and noble thing. So why has it been done under this secrecy in disregard to laws set up to allow that sort of exchange of one right for another?
Darn, I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh, I hate
now,
that.
No. I think we have to know what we are giving up in order to protect ourselves. And as I have said on these microphones 1,000,000,000 times, every time a despot has come along in any country, any dictator has always said, I'm doing this to protect you. And, you know, and gets either elected, as in the case of Hitler or other people. So that really is terrible. And we see it in the mayoral election, to bring it all home yesterday. De Blasio said, this is disgraceful, stopping people who are walking wild black.
Mm-hmm. And he's pledged to reform all of those policies. That was one of his main... Mm-hmm.
Yes, but on the other hand, Bloomberg and Kelly and the other guys, they don't like it because they're saying, we are protecting black people because they're the victims of most of this crime. It's black on black crime and all the rest of it, and poor on black crime, and therefore we're protecting them. So, and there are people who buy that on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to now swing it back to the issue at hand, which is the security versus privacy, which of course goes back to Ben Franklin and the beginning of our republic.
Certainly.
Interesting point from this USA Today article. By the way, if you want to reference it, it's called U.S. Debate Security versus Privacy, 12 Years After 9/11. It's in USA Today. John Mueller, senior fellow at the very libertarian Cato Institute, points out that since September 11th, the calculation is the increased cost of domestic security operations more than $1 trillion. How are you going to afford to keep that up?
And it's come at the cost of not going after organized crime, too. Let's not forget that.
Well, there's no question that the FBI has diverted most of it.
All of its resources has gone to it, right?
If not all, a lot of it. And then I was looking in the paper this morning, and there's huge pictures of the Freedom Plaza, you know, of all of these new, big, huge buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Then we hear chatter from the Al-Qaeda types who are saying, there it is, who put that stuff up on their websites. So, in other words, target again.
Yeah.
And all I can tell you is, it's got to be very scary for a lot of people who have offices in those buildings.
Yeah, I just wrote recently in a blog in the Times Union, and this was not tongue-in-cheek, about why do we have embassies anymore? For the same reason, we're putting our little freedom towers, if you will, our little piece of America, in countries right on the front line, and in more countries than any other. No one has more embassies than the U.S., and each one of those now is a target.
But so if we don't have embassies, then what are we saying? That we're scared? That we can't do our job?
And alas, that is a topic for another program. Oh. And because the panel was late today. So
by about 3 seconds.
All right, sir. The fund drive is coming up a week from next Monday. The lockbox is in operation. I think we're at about $110,000 in the lockbox.
It's terrific. People are really understanding that we can do this. I mean, if we really want to. Look, everybody can find an excuse. The main thing is, are you listening? If you're listening, then all I ask is that you do something. If you listen every day, somebody was telling me just the other day, they met somebody and he said he listens all day, he listens all night. Are you a member? I don't listen that much, was the answer. Come on now, folks. We can't have this if everybody doesn't put a little something in. And that's all I'm asking. I'm not asking for much. If it's $5, it's great. If it's $1,000, it's great.
And the great part is you can do it right now at the lockbox at WAMC.org. There's kind of a controversial picture of a lockbox without a lock, which someone was annoyed about.
Yes, they were annoyed. And I hope that they're not going to hold their money back because there was no lock.
I love the listeners
of
WAMC. Yeah. That's so brilliant.
You know, there's no lock on that box. Get out of here.
It was not tongue-in-cheek.
That's
funny. He was serious?
Well, I think so.
Well, I'm sorry I brought it up.
Fix the icon.
Well, yeah, I like it. It's nicely done. I think Tom Jobe did that. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Tom can add a lock.
All right. Well, we'll put you in the add the lock contingent.
Yeah, I want that.
Well done. That's Rosemary Armeo. She's a Albany journalism professor, University of Albany, that is.
The best of the best.
Investigative reporter. She's always out and about gallivanting around the globe, and it's nice to have her here for a day or two. You'll be back.
I'll be back tomorrow.
You'll be back tomorrow.
Yes.
You never know.
And as of this time, inshallah.
Alan Shartok is our grand poobah here, and we like to have him here as well. You're listening to The Roundtable. Love you to email us, roundtable@wamc.org. You can go to our webpage and comment, or our Facebook page, or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. More. Yes, hour two is on the way.